NASA 557, contact tower 128.15.
Caution, caution. Manual, fuel, manual, fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Curtis.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say that we have two sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety: the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, and Avemco Insurance. Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots and their planes can have safer flights ahead.
Well, hello, Dodd. Here we are again, you indeed. And I, because of our cohorts seem to be off and about somewhere else.
Hope they're having a good time.
We're having a good time, is right. And we got another interesting accident to talk about, an event that has a history. So our audience might find it interesting, as we did. I want to talk about a helicopter crash, a Hughes Model 369. It's a little two-place helicopter. It's a workhorse of a helicopter. It's used all over the country. Power line people use it all the time to inspect the high voltage power lines, and we'll get into that in a few minutes. And it's just a workhorse of a helicopter. Military has a ton of them as well. There's this model. It's the Loach. They use it as a scouting helicopter in the Army. It's just used everywhere. So it's proven to be a very good airplane, a reliable platform. It accumulates a lot of hours every day. I mean, the railroads use them to scout their railroad lines in remote areas. It's just everywhere. And in this particular case, we have a helicopter that this is a 2019 event, March of 2019, and they were trimming trees. And most people don't know that when you're out in rural areas where there is trees, power lines and trees don't always get along. There's forest fires have started when the trees get too close to the power lines and they burn up. Or we get power shortages because the lines come down because of a windstorm and the trees fall on them. So there's lots of negative events around trees and power lines. So one of the things that the power line companies do regularly is come out and trim the tree, but they don't trim them the way you and I do around our houses. They actually put this great big chainsaw like device and dangle it from the bottom of a helicopter like this, and usually they have multiple blades. So quite a operation to watch. I've watched it a few times, and they will actually just hang, because it's heavy, hang this chainsaw like device down below the helicopter and just run it along the side of the trees, and it will trim the trees and trim some pretty substantial branches and cut them off. And they go around the trees, they cut the tops off them with another device, a similar device. So it's proven to be very, very useful for the Forest Service work and power line work. So what we have here in this case was a helicopter that was doing the trimming the trees, and they had a failure, an engine failure, which brought the helicopter down and killed the pilot. And so the NTSB did an investigation, and including a complete teardown, because the causes were not readily available. So they did a complete teardown of the engine and associated bits and pieces, and they found nothing wrong with the engines. They did the hot section, they did the cold, the compressor section. They even did teardowns on some of the components, looking to see why this helicopter had lost power. And after a bit, they figured out that it wasn't the engine, and they started looking. And one of the things that they did observe early on was one of the engine mounts had broken and the engine had shifted, which is something you would normally suspect happened during the impact. So since this airplane was substantially damaged, you would suspect that possibly that would become part of that process. But when the engine proved to be not a problem, and they started to find some other indications like the tail shaft, you know, there's a shaft that connects the engine to the smaller rotor propeller that's in the back of the helicopter that keeps it from rotating around. They found some rubbing on that shaft, and it looked like just a little bit and just recent. So now it becomes a very, very much an interest to the NTSB. And as they started digging into it, they realized that we had a clutch problem, which probably was a result of the pilot trying to do an auto rotation. And also the engine had shifted. So that gives us now a reason to go back and look at that engine mount. And as they went and did a detailed inspection engine mount, they found cracks and they found it broken. And now you're going to send it to the lab, and now you're going to try to figure out how long those cracks were there. So there's a big elaborate process to all of this. And having accomplished all that, then they determined that they believed they had found the problem. So let's take it from there and let's talk through it. So if you would, you want to talk about the pilots and what you found, Todd?
Well, certainly. Again, this is a working helicopter, one that had been working for quite some time. It was originally manufactured in 1981, had 38 years of service at the time of the event, and it had something on the order of, I believe it was almost 14,000 hours, 13,667 airframe hours on this. And you would think with that kind of workout, it's being inspected on a regular basis. And it was. A report indicated that it had several 100-hour inspections in the previous, I believe, six inspections in the 9 months prior to this event, including 300-hour inspection, which said specifically that certain things had to be checked, including the engine mounts, if there was any evidence of a hard landing. And there was no indication of any problems with the engine mount, visually inspect only. Now, of course, because it's mounted inside the airframe, it's one of these things where you can't really see all the way around it, but there is no evidence of cracking that they could see, no evidence of any recent activity that would require a more intensive workout. Now, after the fact, and you see some of the pictures here, there was extensive cracking underneath the painted areas. There was damage to that structure. And so we were talking about this, and I thought, well, there was nothing mentioned about a recent event. I wonder if this particular helicopter had ever been involved in any other NTSB-reported events. And the answer was yes. Not only in 2019, we found an event from the previous year in 2018 where it struck a power line wire and they were able to land without too much struggle. A previous event in 2014, which had fairly extensive damage to the aircraft, including the tail boom being broken off. And another event in 2009. And the one in 2014 was particularly interesting because it seemed to be a fairly substantial damage to the aircraft. And you would have to go through great efforts to put that back together. Nothing in this report said anything about a hard landing inspection being done on these engine mounts prior to those previous events. Doesn't mean it wasn't done. I'm just saying that in this 2019 report, there was no indication that that sort of inspection had ever been done prior to a hard landing. And from our eyes, there are at least two events going back to 10 years before this accident and another one 5 years before where there was very clearly a hard landing. So it calls into question, was the proper kinds of maintenance activities done on that part of the structure that failed, that was involved with the failure in this particular crash?
Now, it's worth noting that the engine mounts that hold the engine in place are critical, because that tail shaft that we talk about, I mentioned it, you mentioned it, that takes power from the engine and runs it back to the rotor in the back of the helicopter that keeps it from turning around in flight. Because what would happen with torque, for those not familiar with helicopters, if you start rotating the rotor blades, the helicopter wants to rotate also. And in order to stop that, because it would lead to a crash in just a few seconds, one puts a rotor in the back, another blade, another helicopter type blade in the back of the airplane to stabilize that rotation. And that is driven off the same engine that drives the main rotor. And it has a shaft. And that shaft needs to be inspected very closely over time, because we've had nothing but problems with those over time. And in the accident investigation that they found, one key little clue that came up was some rubbing on it. Now, it wasn't major rubbing, just a little rubbing. Now, what does that mean? It means that it came in contact with the structure at some time previously. But the report also mentions that it looked fresh. So now it's something that happened either right at the accident or just before the accident. So now it raises the suspicion level of the investigators that did that play a role in this event. And since they went through and they tore the engine apart, totally apart, and could find nothing wrong with the engine, nothing wrong with the fuel system, right? Now that one, this rubbing now starts to take on a different flavor. And again, the engine mounts, you would, after the accident, a substantial damage to the vehicle, you wouldn't not raise an eyebrow if you looked at the engine mounts and found them broken. They did inspect the engine mounts because they're a little bit, it is possible to put them together the wrong way. And they inspected the engine mounts for that. And they found that they were put together properly, multiple pieces to the engine mounts. They were put together properly. And that was done before they really realized that that may play a role in this accident. But now when they eliminated the engine, and now they have to figure out the cause of this rubbing on the tail shaft, these mounts become a little bit more important. And they started to dig into them. And because of what they thought was post-crash accident damage to the mount, the engine mount, now becomes a little more focused. Because if that engine mount had broken in flight, become dislodged in flight, shifted the engine, it has a big effect on both that shaft going back and also on the rotor head in the whole process with a transmission. And so the very complicated set of mechanics in there. So now it has really driven the inspectors or the investigators to dig much deeper into this process. And when they did dig deeper into it, they started to find some serious indications that there was a problem with the mount. It shifted, and there may have been pre-existing conditions in the structure, because it's not just a little mount. It's a whole structure with tubes running around. So it's got to brace together a lot of materials. And they found underneath paint, they found cracking. They found pieces. There was pieces broken, which were obviously you could see. But they also found other failures under the paint, which were just waiting there to rear their ugly head at the most inopportune moment. So they did some pretty good detective work there in figuring out that the engine mount was wrong. It was mostly reliable for the problem that we found. However, what you found, Todd, raised my eyebrows a little bit, because this airplane has had at least three previous major events, two of which involved the main rotor, which impacts on the engine mounts because there's a direct connection from the rotor through the engine. So now it's driving, these other issues are being driven back into it. And in the industry today, it's not unusual for a helicopter that's pretty damaged to get rebuilt. We rebuild airplanes too quite often, but helicopters tend to be more expensive and less available. And oftentimes it's easier to do a major repair on a helicopter structure and bring it back to life than it is to go out and try to find another one because production is low and there's just not a lot of them out there. So in this case, it appears this company that is in the business of high-risk operations. We looked them up. We saw what they were doing. They're definitely in the high-risk category for their personnel and their helicopters, their equipment. So it wasn't a surprise to find some other damage. It was a surprise to find out this airplane was involved in four major accidents. So this airplane was essentially brought back from I don't want to say the dead, but brought back from pretty severe damage to be flying again. Not unusual, but I wonder, it leads one to think about, was there possibly other damage in here on bits and pieces that looked to be okay without really doing a complete inspection on them, like x-rays or non-destructive testing methods? Did the engineers just give them a repair process and not take into consideration the stress and strain on some of these parts, and they were just waiting here to cause a problem? And especially with the 2018 wire strike and a 2019, not even less than a year, maybe 6 months later. We were just talking about that before. But relatively a short time before, we had a wire strike on the rotor blades, which can translate right down to the engine mount. And then we have this engine mount failure that led to an accident. So they may be related. You know, it's really just a curiosity thing, really.
But one other thing that ties at least three of these four events together, the ones that were in the NTSB, the same helicopter operator for the fatal accident flight in 2019 was also the operator in 2014 and 2018. So if there is any chance for any sort of, you know, corporate knowledge being transferred about what this history of the helicopter was, at least for the last three major events, the operator knew full well what had gone through in those three major events, one of which was a wire strike, one of which was a very hard landing that had the tail boom being broken off. So I would hope that they would have had enough insight to do whatever extra investigation or any extra testing that was necessary. And again, the FAA did say something about testing being required if there was evidence of a heavy landing. They did not say whether or not they did not say anything about the previous events and whether they had any bearing on their accident investigation. Now, I'd like to switch gears a little bit to going back to your time on the board, because really, when I read this report, talking about a helicopter cutting trees from the air with a 10-bladed saw, and for those of you watching the video version of this, I actually found not this helicopter, but a similar helicopter with a 10-bladed saw for cutting trees. This is not the only high-risk kind of flying that's done by helicopters close to trees. What have you seen in the industry where it makes your eyebrows rise up, at least, looking at how dangerous this is?
Now, one of them that uses this same kind of helicopter is the wire inspection for high-tension wires. And I've observed this personally from afar, like that, where they actually have a person dangling from the bottom of the helicopter in a harness with a non-conductive, electrical conductive harness that will actually, the helicopter will crawl essentially, slowly move forward along the power lines so that this individual can inspect them for any flaws, any problems that they have in them. And that's a pretty common inspection in the hundreds of thousands of miles of power lines that we have in this country. So, and they just move along, and it's so the individual is not conductive. The harness will not send electricity up to the helicopter, and he can get close to the wires and do whatever he has to do to them and not short circuit them, essentially. But I looked at that for half a day, and I said, not me. You know, I'm fearless, but not that fearless. So it is just one of many high-risk jobs, flying helicopters over long distances, you know, railroad tracks, checking out railroad rights of way, checking out Bureau of Land Management in the West owns an awful lot of property. U.S. government owns a lot of property. And they're always doing surveys, water surveys, all sorts of things that most people don't even recognize. And it's going on daily out there. And helicopters are the workforce because they're low and slow. And you can inspect a lot of real estate in a short period of time using helicopters. Now, interesting, this work is going to change into your area, Todd, is because drones are going to replace a lot of these individuals because drones can actually fly lower, closer to the problem, be equipped with a lot of sensors to do a lot of this work without risking the human being. So we see some positive changes coming to that side of the business.
Well, even if they don't replace the human pilots, what they could do, in my opinion, is look for trouble spots. And if trouble spots are spotted, that they need to have human beings come out there and do the dangerous work at that one spot, that's a whole lot better than having a human being going for many of them going for hundreds of thousands of miles per year looking for a problem. If you can have 99% of that taken care of by something that can fit in the trunk of a car and won't risk anyone's life, that will be an improvement. And this is especially true because this is the kind of flying, the kind of very dangerous, low-altitude flying in the forest or close to forest and power lines that's done all the time, and it doesn't really rise to the public's attention. I can't recall any time in the media where I saw any sort of report, even in passing, about this kind of accident. Let's face it, they're usually happening well away from any kind of urban area. It's not something that's going to be top of mind in local newscasts and certainly not national newscasts. And this is a high-risk, hazardous sort of thing. I'm sure the folks who do this are well paid, but I'm also sure that if there was a better solution out there, the companies that do this would look toward that better solution.
It's expensive. Operating helicopters is expensive. Putting a person at high risk like you do dangling from that harness there's risk pay, so to speak. You know, the pay rate for that person is going to be higher than a person that's not taking that risk. So there's lots of hidden costs in those inspections, which the companies that have to do them would love to reduce any way possible. And the drones may just do that for them. In fact, on the railroad side of the operation, where they used to have people doing flying the routes, looking at the railroad tracks, because it was expensive, they didn't do that everywhere, but they did a lot of it. Now they're using drones to fly them and to check the continuity of the track, before trains come down. People don't realize the track shift, the ground the tracks are on shift. I worked a number of accidents while I was with the NTSB and that very, very problem, especially out west. You've got tracks across vast stretches of desert land. Well, desert land's not stable. And after a big rain, the ground is shifting, the tracks shift, bridges, little trestles, not big bridges, but little ones, get washed out. And we've had a number of Amtrak trains crash because they come speeding along at 80 miles an hour or more. And they go over these bridges and they start wobbling. And the next thing you know, they're off the tracks. And, so there's lots of problems and lots of solutions that can be had with drones rather than human beings running the risk of injury or big damage. Crash a drone, you're not going to lose a lot of money. Crash a helicopter, we're talking about millions of dollars on the helicopter. And that's why helicopters keep coming back, because the cost of replacement as well. I didn't mention that earlier, but the cost of buying a new helicopter is quite high, and fixing some of these helicopters that do crash can be considerably less. So there's a whole bunch of pieces to this puzzle, but it's quite intriguing. And it really raised our interest when we started to dig into this one. What looked like a rather simple accident involving a high-risk operation turned into something even quite more revealing, with for a total of four crashes, and the amount of damage, the amount of resurrection of this damaged helicopter to put it back in service. So it's quite an interesting process. And you're going to post those, that information that we have.
Oh yes, I'll have all four of the accident investigations from this aircraft will be available, as well as some supplementary documents and photographs. And again, including a photograph I found elsewhere of a 10-bladed system for a helicopter. Like I said, it looked bizarre to me. I'd never seen anything like that before. So I hope you all out there will enjoy it.
Okay. I think we talked this one to death.
I think so, too. And
well, we didn't mention the probable cause of this accident, of the latest one.
We did not. And let me just read that for everyone. The National Transportation Safety Board determines the probable cause of this accident to be a fatigue failure of the overrunning clutch subassembly due to abnormal bending loads due to cracks on the center engine mount, which resulted in an in-flight loss of power. Contributing to the accident was a helicopter's low altitude and airspeed when the loss of power occurred, which precluded the pilot from successfully performing an auto rotation. And just for those of you out there who are unfamiliar with that term, an auto rotation is a process by which you set the helicopter up so that rather than having the rotor being powered by the engine, the rotor is being turned by descending through the air, and you change the pitch of the blade, sort of like pulling back on the yoke, and you increase lift right before landing, and you settle down softly. This happened at treetop level. You need way more room than that to execute an auto rotation. And given the damage of this aircraft had before impact, even that might not have been possible.
Yeah, things were misaligned, right? That clutch assembly and the rubbing of the rotor may have precluded all of that from happening. One will never know, really. Okay, Todd. Well, and as our general aviation expert, what do you have for us today?
Well, my second to last word is, this is an unfamiliar kind of flying to me. I've flown in helicopters before, but have not tried to fly a helicopter, have no real interest in that, and don't really understand the mechanics of how this differs from the planes I fly. But again, reading this report, it gives me an understanding that there are certain issues to look at with helicopters you might not look at with other aircraft. And digging into it further, he found further issues. It's like, oh my gosh, you can have an aircraft that has had several major events and still be out there, you know, performing service for the operators. And just calls into question, if you have a helicopter with that kind of history, are there additional kinds of investigations or additional kinds of maintenance actions that should be taken, even if it's not required by the regulation?
Right. The engineer who designed the major repair should take those into consideration. And he may have, we just don't have any knowledge of that based upon what's available publicly. So, and again, I'll just keep on saying what I'm saying because we just keep having these problems. If you're going to go flying, you need to plan your flight. Plan with your weather. You know, it's not just the weather where you're taking off or the weather where you're landing. It's everything in between. And, you know, if you're taking a long-legged flight, there could be a lot of weather in between. And the pre-flight. We did an earlier accident a week ago or so. The pre-flight played a major role in it. A lack of a good pre-flight played a major role. So please pay attention to your airplane. You know, let's not take off with an airplane that has problems that you haven't found because you didn't bother to look. You know, and after you get in the air, given today all the people that are flying, please put your head on a swivel, look around. Don't have an accident because you got heads down looking at your instrument panel and flew right into somebody else's airspace. And please fly safely.
Thank you for checking out our show. We really value our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you and how much you like it. So please give us 5 stars in your podcast platform.
We want to keep in contact with you. We are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetydetectives@gmail.com. By the way, if you're on YouTube, we're really working on growing the channel, and it helps if you all send in comments. Please do that, and we read all the comments.
And be sure to subscribe. Remember, if you're in the market for aviation insurance, you can save 5% with Avemco just by mentioning our show. Visit them at www.avemco.com. That's it for this episode of the Flight Safety Detective. Until the next episode, fly safe.